Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You know, Hub, I think you hit a great point there.
Hub Arkish.
The Arkish family in pro football media journalism has been around almost as long as the game itself.
670 The Score's NFL Insider.
This is probably not all that interesting to anybody but us in the media, but James Daniels looks bigger in the ass and the thighs again.
Shaw Media and Pro Football Weekly.
They started dabbing again, and you know, so they're still not shaking hands, but they progressed past, you know, bumping elbows, and you know, that part of it worried me a little bit.
Dapping. Dab is a very aggressive way where you could smoke some marijuana.
I thank you for enlightening this boomer. I actually knew what neither one meant, so I appreciate
it. Okay, yeah. Hub, I would dab or dap with you any day, socially distancing responsibility, of course.
Hub Arkish, that's getting better than this.
Hub Arkish with Danny Parkins on 670 The Score.
This segment with Hub Arkish is brought to you by PropSwap. Hub is with us on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park. What's up, Hub?
Nothing much, Dan. How you doing?
I'm doing very, very well. Jane Slater today reported, she covers the Cowboys, that Cowboys players are turning on Mike McCarthy. Not prepared, don't teach the game, make no adjustments in-game. Only took six games. What do you make of Mike McCarthy's situation in Dallas?
Got to blame somebody. Not going to be Jerry, you know. So it's I'm not close enough to know, you know, Danny. It's they built a toxic locker room. Jones does it every year. They're obviously a bad football team right now. There's too much talent for them to be that bad. Certainly, it could be, you know, in large part on McCarthy. I have no way of knowing that. His track record as an NFL coach certainly argues, you know, against the likelihood of that. Has anybody been quoted for attribution or?
No, it's all anonymous sourcing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what to make of it. I find it hard to believe that given his second chance in the NFL after the way things ended in Green Bay, that Mike McCarthy decided to phone this one in. So it'll be a developing story, and we'll keep an eye on it. But I don't have any firsthand information on it.
When you look at the Cowboys, what do you think is wrong? I mean, Dak Prescott's obvious, injuries on the offensive line, but do you think it's just injuries? It feels like it has to be deeper than that.
Well, I mean, it's the worst, one of the worst defenses I've ever seen, and that's they're you know, Van Der Esch went down early, but other than that, it's not like they, you know, were decimated by injuries on the defensive side of the ball. I don't, you know about the changeover in staff. You know, if they changed the system dramatically, it appears to still be a base 4-3 concept. Offensively, I thought that the game plan and play calling was suspect. If I've got Zeke Elliott, I don't want to be putting the game in Dak Prescott's hands. And if you study the Cowboys, I know some people agree with me, some don't. I think Dak Prescott's one of the most overrated quarterbacks in the league. That offense has to run around Zeke Elliott, and it hasn't to this point. So that's on the coaching staff if, you know, I'm right. But I think that some of the talent is overrated. The offensive line decimated as much by, you know, retirement and injuries as anything else. They're overloaded at wide receiver now when they really had problems there before. But I think the defense is actually playing fairly close to its ability. And when you're giving up points the way they are, you're going to have problems.
So the other big story in the NFL today is that it's already Tua time, that they're going away from Ryan Fitzpatrick at 3-3 coming off of back-to-back wins, but it is their bye, and he is a first-round pick. Are you surprised by the timing?
I really am, Danny, and I have no problem with it. I mean, this is what you drafted him for, but what was the purpose of playing Fitzpatrick in the first six games if you were just waiting for the bye? I mean, you know, Tua threw two balls Sunday, and now they've decided he's ready. Was it a six-week orientation period? I'm not totally sure what they were doing there. You know, they're 3-3. They're going to be probably a 500 team, although, you know, that may keep them in contention in the AFC East. And so clearly, well, I shouldn't say clearly, but it would seem likely that they're not really interested in making a playoff run. You have to assume that the young quarterback is not going to be as prepared as Fitzpatrick is. And Fitzpatrick's played very well. So, again, I don't have a problem with it, but the timing of it is certainly puzzling.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think you got to find out what you have sooner than later. And the most valuable thing you can have is a great quarterback on a rookie deal. And you're not winning the Super Bowl either way this year, but I'm with you. Unless he wasn't healthy, then just play him from the jump. Like, I don't really get what the 6 weeks was supposed to do. We had a Monday Night Football doubleheader last night, Hub. We've had Tuesday Night Football because of the pandemic. Do you think the NFL is looking at these like weird situations and in the back of their mind thinking, you know, in the future, Tuesday Night Football or Monday Night Doubleheader or Friday Night Football, like, do you think there is possibility for NFL schedule changes that come out of 2020?
Oh, absolutely. Not Friday night. They don't want to compete with
college. Yeah, that's a bad example.
With college. No, it's but I think I know Tuesday's one they've had their eye on for a while, and this goes all the way back. I can't remember. I want to say it was 2014 because it was not the Nick Foles year. But I was going to do a game for Westwood on Christmas night. They were supposed to play the Sunday after Christmas, the 26th, and in Philadelphia, and there was a blizzard. I got into town as it was starting. There was 18 inches of snow. The town shut down, and the game ended up being played on Tuesday night. And it was the year that the Vikings were a bad football team. They had Joe Webb playing quarterback, and they came in and they upset the Eagles team. Maybe it was 2012. I don't even remember what year exactly. But as far back as then, people were talking and rumors were dropping that they could have played the game Monday night after the snow on Sunday, but they purposely delayed till Tuesday because they wanted to test it out for TV possibilities. They've been thinking about this for a long time. Now, whether they want to go to it, we have to look at the other side of it, is that ratings are down this year for the first time in forever. They're down in professional sports in general. Football not nearly as bad as the other three major sports, but they are down. So it may not be the best time to be thinking about adding another night, but there's no doubt in my mind that at some point they'd love to add another primetime slot.
So I don't know what you think of the ratings discussion, because I see streaming is up, right? I think Fox just released something because they were streaming the Chiefs-Bills game yesterday. Like, streaming on their services was up 30-something percent for streaming. People are watching and consuming everything different, and we can't get together with people, and sports are communal. Hey, go over to your neighbor's house, watch the game. Hey, get your fantasy football league together. Watch the game. So when you take that away and you put a bunch of other sports that aren't normally competing, right? The NBA Finals are not normally competing with week two of the National Football League. I feel like anybody who's doing any real analysis or decisions based on ratings in 2020, good or bad, is being ridiculously short-sighted.
Oh, I would agree with that. I mean, the NFL is going to be fine, as are the other three major sports, if we ever get healthy again as a country. And even beyond that, relative to the NFL, you know, you got to remember, you got the NBA, the NHL, and baseball are down literally, I don't study this every week, but the last time I looked about 10 days ago, they were down in the areas of 35 to 50%. The NFL was down 12%. So, there is a flip side to this, though. There's a, maybe I'm playing devil's advocate here, but the other end of it, And I know this because we've been syndicating the Pro Football Weekly TV show for years, and so I've learned a little bit about how the ratings work. The one thing that we've never gotten credit for is the NFL ratings do not get credit for the television sets in sports bars and public locations where there are crowds of 50, 100, 200. You don't get those viewers. Most of those people are at home because of the virus, and so you'd expect that might drive the ratings up, and it's not. The ratings are down. But I think at the end of the day, you know, this is a unique situation, one that we hope we will never experience again, and so I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, you can't form any, you know, definitive conclusions on this, and nobody's going to make changes because of it.
All right, so let's talk Bears. We're 2 weeks away from the NFL trade deadline. It falls on the same day as the presidential election. I got one for you, Hub. You ready?
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. A fourth or maybe a third. It might take a third. To the Patriots for Joe Thuney, their guard, 27 years old, playing on the franchise tag. It'd be a rental, but you'll get a comp pick for him. You're probably not going to pay him big money. But the Patriots definitely aren't going to pay him big money, so they'd be interested in a draft pick. The Bears get to upgrade their interior of the offensive line for 10 games, 9 games, and you go from there.
Well, Joe Thuney is a hell of a football player, and it'd be a real upgrade, and I'd have no problem giving up a third for a rental because he is the kind of player who could solidify more than just that position. But I'm not sure of your assumption that the Patriots aren't going to pay him. If they're not going to pay him, why'd they pay him on the franchise tag? It's you know, I don't think they're anxious to see him leave. They don't pay a lot of guys. You're right about that. But they do pick a guy every once in a while. They pick Stephon Gilmore, and I'm not so sure that they're ready to part with Joe Thuney. I'll give you a different one that I was thinking about. Tell me what you think, because it doesn't cost you anything but money if you can convince him to do it. Larry Warford opted out at the beginning of the season, but he was a free agent. The only players who can opt back in are players who were not under contract at the time that they opted out. He could come back if somebody could talk him into it. He's at home. He's a three-time Pro Bowler. He's a little bit older. He's not old, but he's probably, I'm going to guess, 29 or 30. I haven't looked at it yet. But again, we're thinking the same way. If you're serious and you want to be bold, get this guy on the phone and find out if there's any chance that he wants to come back and play half a season, because much like Thuney, he'd be a huge upgrade over where you're at.
Have you heard anything about, is there any talk of that, of him being in shape, of him trying to play football, anything like that?
I don't know. His name pops up once a week for a team that has problems on the offensive line, but he has made no noise about changing his mind. I don't know, you know, if he's been keeping in shape at all. But really, offensive line is the one position where, unless you let yourself totally go in a couple of weeks, you could be ready to go out there. If you're a better player, you could be ready to go out there and make a contribution, I think.
The only reason I thought that the Patriots probably weren't going to pay him is, you know, Stephon Gilmore is arguably the best corner at the second most valuable position in football, maybe the third most valuable position in football, depending on how you do pass rush v shutdown corner. And I think for Belichick, a shutdown corner is actually maybe a little bit more valuable. Cap's going down 10, 15, 20% next year. They're gonna pay big money to a guard. I don't know. That doesn't strike me as a very Patriot thing to do.
Dan, you may be right. I just don't know. I know they like him a lot. This much,
yeah,
I do
sure
know.
They should.
And they would like not to lose him. But whether they're even in a position to pay him. And they're going to have plenty of cap space because they're not going to have a quarterback under contract. But what we don't know is, would the Patriots, of all teams, consider a rebuild? Because I don't know where this season is going at this point. You know, it looked like they were going to be a playoff team again with a revamped offense built around Newton. But then, you know, Newton misses a couple weeks. And, you know, now you got Sony Michel, you're starting running back on the COVID list. They're 2-3, so I think some of it probably depends on what happens with them the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, totally fair. And I think that the Patriots could say, hey, we're not winning a Super Bowl. There's Baltimore, there's Pittsburgh, there's Kansas City, there's Tennessee. But we could probably still win a division even if we trade a guard. and we get a draft pick for it. So I feel like they can maybe thread that needle a bit. So that it's a name I'd think of because I think that he'd be a huge upgrade, and I think the Bears need it. When you watch the film of Bears-Panthers, specifically the offensive tape, was there anything to be encouraged from? I mean, they had a 9-play scoring drive, a 10-play scoring drive, a 10-play scoring drive. Like, they did have some sustained success, but they couldn't run the ball basically at any point. What is there to build on offensively from what we just saw about, against Carolina, if anything?
Well, you know, Danny, I mean, it's not like everybody is playing bad together at the same time. The offensive line isn't good enough. You could arguably get an upgrade at every position. Cody Whitehair is certainly, you know, more than serviceable at center, and he's not playing badly. He's not playing great. Bobby Massie is pretty steady. I think he's underrated at right tackle. You know, he has a miss every once in a while in pass protection. He's a good but not great run blocker. The issue is Jermaine Ifedi struggles in pass protection. He can be dominating blocking the run sometimes, and then other times he'll have, I don't know if it's an assignment miss or what it is, and then at left guard and left tackle, the left side of that line was just ugly. You know, you look, I think David Montgomery has a chance to be a real good running back. I'm not saying he's going to be an all-pro, but I'm seeing signs that, you know, give him a hole here and there, and you can start to have some kind of consistent production on the ground. And Cordarrelle Patterson is a great change of pace guy. And they've got enough talent at wide receiver. Jimmy Graham, while I now am sold on the move because it's not my $9 million for what he's going to give you in the red zone, clearly isn't a threat really between the 20s anymore. Demetrius Harris never was. Don't know if Cole Kmet can be, but they're still better at tight end than they were a year ago. And they have enough talent at wide receiver. I still maintain, and again, I did the tape review this week and then went back and went a little deeper trying to figure this thing out. I think they're as much out of whack. I think the scheme is off as much as it is a lot of individual performances. I mean, you're going to struggle at left tackle. That's all there is to it. You're going to struggle probably at left guard, you know, if you don't bring in some kind of reinforcements. You're not going to get a ton in the passing game out of the tight ends other than Graham in the red zone. But I do think that if they can figure out how to run the football without having three tight ends on the field, that opens up more things they can do in the passing game. It can keep defenses more honest, and they can get better. They don't need to be a great offense. They just need to be consistent. They need to give the defense a little more time to rest because, Danny, we are starting to see signs that this defense may start to approach where they were 2 years ago.
Yeah, the defense is obviously incredible. And by the way, Hub, on this show, it's not Demetrius Harris. It's Dropmetrius Incompletrius Harris. That's okay. That's what we've named him. Okay, so just, you know, for next time. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Bears-Rams, you mentioned the offensive line. And I talked about this with Olin a lot yesterday. And he said, he cited the 2010 team. He's like, we were bad early. And by the end, we were good enough together where the sum was greater than the parts that we were a pretty damn good offense. So he believes that they can get better even without a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. But now you got Aaron Donald, who's going to line up against Rashad Coward or at times against Jermaine Ifedi. How big of a problem is this about to be Monday night?
Well, it's a huge problem. I mean, you know, Aaron Donald is the best defensive player in football. He's already got 7.5 sacks and 8.5 tackles for loss. He's having maybe his best year, and they're going to have to double-team him and scheme the ball away from him pretty much all night long. That's the problem you face with the Rams. But it is doable. I mean, there are teams who find a way to try and at least avoid him. He's going to make some big plays, but he doesn't have to dominate the game. What is interesting about the Rams, I've just kind of started my homework on them because they surprised me. They took a step back last year, and I thought they'd take another step back this year, and they got out of the gate strong, and they were sitting there 4-1 until Sunday night. But when you dig a little deeper, you realize the only good team they've played is Buffalo, and they got beat, and they almost got routed, except Buffalo went to sleep when they were up 28-7. San Francisco, you know, yeah, they're the defending NFC champs, but they're not that team this year. The Rams' four wins are against the NFC East. I mean, that's it. You know, I mean, they've beaten the four worst teams in football. So it's certainly not an unwinnable game. And if I'm the Rams, I'm sitting there saying, what are we going to do about, you know, the Bears' defense, which is better than the Rams, because you not only have to account for Khalil Mack, they know Robert Quinn pretty well. The Bears' secondary is just playing lights out right now. Roquan Smith is on fire. So I don't know how Matt Nagy is going to handle Aaron Donald, and I'm sure it's going to have him up at night all week long. But when I move past the one player on the Rams and I start comparing these units, I think this is a football game. I don't have a pick yet. I don't know what's going to happen. I certainly don't feel good about where the Bears' offense is at right now. But this is another, you know, winning team that the Bears certainly should be able to play with.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a winnable game. I was down on the Rams coming in to it, and like you mentioned, they've beat the NFC East, so nothing completely should change my opinion. It's a great matchup though, and I asked DeMarco Farr, the old Ram, and he's their sideline reporter now for the Rams, like, is Jared Goff good or simply a product of Sean McVay, a great play caller and play designer? I still don't know, and they gave him like $130 million. How do you come out on that?
He's playing better this year, but I don't know that he's ever going to be the guy who week in, week out wins football games for you. I think he's probably better than a game manager, but he's not a game changer. He seems to be a little streaky. I think he has slumps and he gets hot. His numbers are up this year. They're better. In fairness to him, I don't think that's a special, you know, receiving group. Cooper Kupp is really good. There's no question about that. Robert Woods is a solid two. He's not a special two. This kid, I'll tell you one of the interesting it's not a matchup. One of the interesting things to watch in this game is Darrell Henderson Jr. was taken three picks before David Montgomery. He is now their lead back, and
he's looked good.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's quietly having a very nice year. Everybody kind of got focused on Malcolm Brown from that opener, but Henderson is actually the number one back now. And I think McVay is doing a much better job of scheming and game planning his offense to success, you know, certainly not explosiveness, but success, than Matt Nagy has been able to do so far.
Hub, good stuff as always. Thank you. We'll be listening pre and post game, and just try to work in drop Metrius in, complete Metrius Harris. It's kind of fun.
I now that I have it, I'm sure we'll find a way to use it.
Thank you, my friend. That is Hub Arkish. Matt Spiegel is going to hang out for the 5 o'clock hour, and I saw this thing, okay, and we have to talk about it. It's absolutely bananas. And it's going to hit you a certain way depending on your age. I'm just going to tell you that on the front end. Some of you will care deeply. Some of you will care basically not at all. But I think all of us will be able to find common ground on how weird this thing is. I'm going to tell you about it next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Let's score.
Hey! Perhaps I could be of some assistance.
That's our fifth guy. Let's go. Now you get to live up your dream. Let's go.
All right.
Need to score 2 points.
Here's how I see it. Doc.
Yes.
You kick it into the girl, Bunny.
Yeah.
Down in the post. You dish it back out to the guy, Bunny.
Got
it. You swing around the mic over here. You go to the hole and dominate.
We on defense.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa. I don't play defense.
One of the most quoted lines from an objectively bad movie, the original Space Jam, starring Michael Jordan and the Toon Squad. Matt Spiegel will be in for the 5 o'clock hour. But we got Rick Camp here. Rick Camp is literally in studio. How lucky are we? Shane Reardon is here. Nick Shepkowski is here. The whole mob is assembled. You out there in the mob audience, we appreciate you. I loved Space Jam as a kid because I was a kid. I associate Space Jam with my youth. There's nostalgia to it. When the Space Jams, the shoes, were re-released, I had to have them. They're amazing. So even though I don't think it's a good movie, Space Jam mattered to my youth. And I'm guessing a lot of people in my age range, early 30s, I turned 34 on Thursday, like that's, I bet a lot of people on some level can relate to me. Like Michael Jordan could have done anything. And I was going to be like, yep, it's the greatest thing ever. And I was like, that guy was snubbed for an Oscar. Like that was my take as a kid. Because it was Michael Jordan. He could walk on water. But, Shane, are you there?
I'm here. Sorry, I'm bouncing around like crazy today.
No, you're good. I want an audience among you guys
Sure. For
what leaked on the internet the other day, which is
that guy in the New York Times touching himself on a Zoom call.
That did leak on the internet. Yep, Jeffrey Toobin. That's not a good use of your time, but that's not what I was talking about. This involves cartoons and a movie, you know, targeted towards children. So, you know, thank you for that image. But as everyone knows, LeBron James is doing a Space Jam remake. They're doing Space Jam 2. And a promotional email leaked with the plot to Space Jam 2. Now, keep in mind, this is the original plot. If you go to the IMDb page for the original Space Jam with Bill Murray, Michael Jordan, this is what it was. In a desperate attempt to win a basketball match and earn their freedom, the Looney Tunes seek the aid of retired basketball champion Michael Jordan. Okay? Fairly ridiculous, but succinct and to the point. In a desperate attempt to win a basketball match and earn their freedom, the Looney Tunes seek the aid of retired basketball champion Michael Jordan.
Who let them put match in that, by the way?
I was just thinking that. That's so annoying.
It is annoying. It's very smug. You guys ready for the description of Space Jam 2?
Please.
This might be the single craziest connecting of sentences. Like, every word is crazier than the previous word. During a trip to the Warner Brothers studio, NBA superstar LeBron James and his son accidentally get trapped with a world that contains all of the Warner Brothers' stories and characters under the control of a malfunctioning, all-powered force named Al G, played by Don Cheadle. With the help of Bugs Bunny, LeBron must navigate through a never-before-imagined world filled with iconic movie scenes and characters as they reassemble the Looney Tunes to rescue his lost son. Now to get back home, LeBron and the Toons have to unravel Al G's mysterious plan and win an epic basketball game against digital gamified super versions of the NBA and WNBA's biggest stars as the entire world watches.
All right.
I have no interest in seeing that movie.
Do you think it's required to take psychedelic drugs before you see that movie?
Hopefully not for kids.
But that's what I'm asking. Like, that's... Or is it... So Ryan Coogler wrote the movie. He's producing the movie. Do we think that he took psychedelic drugs to come up with the concept for Space Jam 2? That is the single weirdest movie description I've ever... These are some movies that Warner Brothers has under their umbrella. Casablanca, Citizen Kane, Pride and Prejudice, The Wizard of Oz, The Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, The Dark Knight. Like, they could do anything. This movie could be, they could do anything with this movie under that description. And I feel like the chances of it making sense are approximately 0%.
Go ahead, Shep.
I was just going to say, I hope that they have Ray Allen or somebody else for LeBron to pass to bail them all out.
Oh, to beat the Toon Squad or to beat the Monstars or whatever
the superimposed Monstars / NBA / WNBA stars or whatever the heck that is?
The all-powerful force named Al G, played by Don Cheadle. Well, here are the players that we know that are in this. Klay Thompson, Anthony Davis, Diana Taurasi, Damian Lillard, Chris Paul, and Kyle Kuzma.
As long as J.J. Barea is not, then LeBron's set.
That's right. Nice little 2000.
Why are they trying so hard? What was wrong with the plot line and the story to the first Space Jam, where you're just playing up against cartoon characters and it's fun and we get to see all the Looney Tunes? What's with all this garbage imagery of fighting your way through Looney Tunes? See, I don't get that. And why is his stupid son involved?
At least it's a game and not a match.
Wait, why is his son stupid? I'll dance on LeBron anybody, as much as anyone, but why is his son dumb all of a sudden?
And it's not dumb. It's a stupid name. Bronny's a stupid name for stupid millennials or Gen Z idiots. Don't ever I don't call you Nikki, Danny. That's a version of Dan. But like, don't call me Bronny.
Didn't LeBron come out and say Didn't he come out and say he wishes he hadn't made his kid a junior?
Yes. Yeah, he wishes that he hadn't done that because he feels like he puts too much pressure on him. And he's like, I want him to be his own man.
But he just wants the name to himself. He's just a selfish guy. He just wants the name to himself. No, it sounds like a stupid movie, and I have no interest in it. And that's not even an MJ LeBron thing. That sounds like a stupid movie.
Yeah, it does sound horrible. Not that the original Space Jam, like Danny said, was exactly award-winning or worthy, but this is a reach.
I couldn't believe it when I read it. I was like, that is the weirdest thing I think I've ever read. That doesn't make any sense. And so they're just going to be jumping from old Warner Brother movies. Like, which ones are going to be included? Kids are watching this. Like, kids do not exactly get references, you know, like, so you got to be very careful here that, like, if all of a sudden you have to you've seen Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings and Godzilla and Batman to understand the new Space Jam, like, no kid's gonna get what the hell they're talking about here.
The bigger point here is Space Jam did not have to be remade. There's absolutely no reason for LeBron James, and I'm not a LeBron hater, there's no reason for him to have to remake Space Jam. And if you are, just make it a literal shot-for-shot remake. Just do the same thing you did because it worked. This is stupid.
Yeah,
this
Hangover 2.
This is one of those things about feeling old of, okay, now they're targeting us for every bit of nostalgia humanly possible, and this is just another bad version of it, so that all the parents that haven't read up on it at all are going to be like, oh, I liked Space Jam as a kid. My kid will like Space Jam as a kid. What could possibly go wrong?
Everything.
Yeah, I mean, I do think one of the best things that came out of Space Jam, the original, was whatever Jordan number shoe that was. Those have to be top three or top four all-time pair of Jordans. And I don't think LeBron's going to have a shoe that's nearly as cool as those Jordans were.
No, LeBron, I mean, LeBron's shoes do not, you know, move the needle like Jordans do. Like I said, like when the Space Jams, when those shoes got re-released, I bought them instantly. Like that was a must have. It was incredible. I agree with you completely on that. And I'm not a LeBron hater at all. This has nothing to do with LeBron James. And Dexter's like, is there any basketball in this movie? Excellent question. They have to win an epic basketball game against the digital gamified super versions of the NBA and WNBA's biggest stars as the entire world watches. It feels like a trippy. You know, remember Johnny Depp's take on Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
Yes, awful. Very much
all
so.
All time bad.
That's what this is.
It's absolutely what it's going to be.
Like, you had Gene Wilder's version. It was incredible. And then you're like, let's modernize it for a next generation of kids. That book should be reimagined. Johnny Depp, biggest movie star in the world. LeBron, biggest star in the world. Let's reimagine Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory for a new generation of kids. Totally reasonable move for Hollywood. And then, like, you know, instead of making Willy Wonka really likable, let's make him as scary and creepy as possible. It's a terrible idea. It's an all-time awful idea. And so it feels a little like that's what's happening here. Like, let's make Space Jam complicated.
I'm very interested in seeing a trailer. Very interested in trying to place some imagery behind these words, these nonsense words.
Yeah, me too.
More credit than I'll give it. I have no interest in trailer shows up in my Twitter feed. I'm keeping scrolling. You're not getting my 2 minutes.
I can't wait till Chef's Kid gets old enough to where he has to sit through these. He has no choice in the matter. Because right now you can dismiss it out of hand and be like, well, the kid can't do pretty much anything right now. So, all right, whatever. Fine. However, once that speaking starts, that's going to be a problem.
So again, this is the synopsis to the new Space Jam with LeBron James. During a trip to the Warner Brothers studio, NBA superstar LeBron James and his son accidentally get trapped with a world that contains all of Warner Brothers' stories and characters under the control of a malfunctioning, all-powerful force named Al G, played by Don Cheadle. With the help of Bugs Bunny, LeBron must navigate through a never-before-imagined world filled with iconic movie scenes and characters as they reassemble the Looney Tunes to rescue his lost son. Now to get back home, LeBron and the Tunes have to unravel Al G's mysterious plan and win an epic battle against digital gamified superversions of the NBA and WNBA's biggest stars as the entire world watches.
Two thoughts here. Is Al G supposed to be a modernized version of Ali G, or is it supposed to be the oceanic fungi algae? What is it? What's the point of algae if it's not one of those two things?
I don't know.
And number two, the synopsis sounds a lot like the train of thought behind a Mitch email, just without the spelling errors.
Fair. It's fair.
Same length, though, and it's all in the subject line.
Touch them all. Rick Camp in studio. Matt Spiegel at 5 o'clock. We figure out how much NFL is too much NFL next on The Score.
And Rick Camp in studio.
Oh, he's in studio. All right. It's the Danny Parkins show. Matt Spiegel's going to hang out for the 5 o'clock hour. I think it's me, Spiegs, and Layla next Monday and Tuesday, I want to say. I'm working through all of it. I don't know my whole schedule. I know Mark Carmen is hosting with me tomorrow, Thursday, and Friday. But we'll hang out with Spiegs for the 5 o'clock hour, and then at least Monday and Tuesday of next week. I don't know the whole schedule off the top of my head. I probably should. I'm a professional, I promise. They pay me for this. I was thinking about, we had the doubleheader yesterday for Monday Night Football. We've had Tuesday Night Football. We've had weird stuff. I asked Hub about it. What's the next thing for NFL expansion? Because Thursday Night Football gets crushed for player safety. Monday Night Football gets crushed for not being as culturally significant as it was 15, 20 years ago. Sunday Night Football is King of the Castle, King of the Castle. And by the way, oh my God, Borat 2. Like, that just so excited. So excited. Sacha Baron Cohen is like on my Mount Rushmore of dream guest to interview. He never does media, so it's probably not even worth trying. But God, I am so excited for Borat too. But I digress. I feel like the NFL will keep trying to take over every day of the week and expand into Tuesday night football. I don't think they'll want a Monday night football doubleheader because Bills Chiefs starting at 4 o'clock Central, 5 o'clock on the East Coast, there's just no way to get a huge rating number by NFL standards starting a game that early. So I don't think Monday night football doubleheader is the answer. I definitely agree with Hub that Tuesday night football is more likely. But to me, the problem, just as a viewer, is the best thing that the NFL has done broadcast-wise in the last 5 years is make Red Zone widely available. Like, it's not a DirecTV thing anymore. There's Andrew Siciliano on DirecTV for NFL Sunday Ticket users, and then there's Scott Hansen for the cable users, the Xfinity users among us. You can obviously stream different ones depending on your television platform. But like that level of football, no commercials, the noon, the 3 o'clock games, just having it constant is the best thing since the yellow first down line was added to football broadcasts. And the football product on television is perfect, right? There's a time, it's once a week. The games matter a lot. You build your schedule around it. You talk about it leading up to the game for days. You talk about the game after for days. It bridges the gap until the next game. The NFL pace is perfect. This past Sunday, though, showed like the one flaw in the arsenal, which was that 3:25 window. They only had two games because a couple teams are on bye, and then a couple teams had to have schedule move for COVID reasons. So you had a Monday night doubleheader. Yeah, teams on bye. You have to have Sunday night football. They want to have Thursday night football. And then you only have two games in the 3 o'clock window. One is Jets-Dolphins, 24-0. The other is Bucks-Packers. Amazing game. But for the second half, Buck and Aikman are talking about flyovers and filler. Like, it's a nothing game. You need at least three, preferably four games in that 3 o'clock window to not cannibalize the best broadcast advent that you've had in the last 5 years, which is the Red Zone channel. Red Zone was completely useless on Sunday in the 3 o'clock window. Now, I don't think the NFL cares about that. I'm sure they will go for money and try to make Tuesday night football a thing to own another day of the week. And it doesn't interfere with high school football. It doesn't really interfere with college football. I know like my degenerate Maction people among us and like, hey, I'm right there with you. But if you want to watch your Maction, get two screens. But for the most part, I think Tuesday is where they expand to, but it's going to come, unfortunately, at the expense of that 3 o'clock window, and it's going to be hurt in our Red Zone viewing. So I don't love that. And they haven't said this officially. This is just my, you know me, Olin made fun of me for it yesterday. My Parkins hypothetical where I spin three things forward and ask you a question about, like, what does the NFL broadcast schedule look like in 2025? I think Tuesday night football is a part of it. I think Amazon will have streaming rights to NFL games across the board. I think Fox, CBS, ABC, NBC will all be in the Super Bowl rotation. And I think someone will get a chance to bid on maybe like a partial season Tuesday night football package. But that's going to come at the expense of more games in the 3 o'clock window, which is going to hurt the Red Zone. Come back and tell me if I was right or wrong in the year 2025. You never go wrong by bringing in our next guest. Matt Spiegel feels like he's been missing out on this Bears season in some specific ways. I want to know what he's talking about. And I got to be honest, national baseball's tough for me when the Cubs and the Sox aren't playing. It can be tough. I love the World Series. I love big stakes. But sometimes I'll get around to game 5, 6, 7. Spiegs is going to sell us on the World Series. He wants to weigh in on that Theo Epstein hot take from earlier. But we start with Spiegs' analysis of this Bears season next on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.